Good morning to you. This is the case of Yagodinsky versus Sutton, and we will start by introducing ourselves. I'm Mike Havoc, and I'm the Chief Justice, and by order of seniority of membership on the court will introduce itself.
Good morning. This is Justice Miller Lerman, appearing by WebEx. Thank you.
William Castle.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning. Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
John Frydenberg.
And counsel, Mr. Harris, are you here today?
I am, Your Honor. Thank you.
Yes, good morning to you. And
good morning, Your Honor. This is Eric Sutton, counsel for Brad Sutton, and also in the room with me is Thomas Grennan.
Thank you, Mr. Sutton, and good morning to you, and good morning to Mr. Grennan. Do any of you have questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Then, Mr. Harris, good morning to you. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. The real issue in this case is whether this court will allow trial courts to continue to ignore the Daubert-Schaeffersman law set out clearly by this court and by our federal courts and by our Eighth Circuit. The trial court was wrong as a matter of law in applying the four-step checklist that this court remanded the case on our previous appeal. And all of these were clear violations of law. And on the other hand, plaintiff presented and fulfilled all its obligations and necessary proof to establish and allow his expert to testify in accordance with our Daubert Schaeffersman rules and rules of evidence. So,
counsel, we're really talking about one aspect of Dr. McLaren's proffered testimony, right? You're focusing your argument on the diagnosis of a traumatic brain injury, right? There's no fussing about the rest of Dr. McLaren's diagnosis or treatment of your client, correct?
Correct. He was admitted as an expert. He testified as an expert. He's qualified as an expert. His opinions regarding traumatic brain injury diagnosis and treatment were excluded by the trial court in the Daubert motion and order.
So Dr. McLaren is a licensed and credentialed chiropractor under Nebraska law, correct?
Yes, and under Nebraska law, the statute and the regulations label him a chiropractic physician. And the court
does either the Chiropractic Act or the Nebraska Board of Chiropractic recognize any subspecialty?
I don't think they recognize subspecialties in neurology or orthopedist or anything else. So those are boards.
So are you essentially asking this court to recognize a subspecialty of chiropractic neurology that neither the legislature nor the Board of Chiropractic has recognized?
Absolutely not. I'm asking this court to recognize Dr. McLaren as a chiropractic physician as defined in the statutes and in the regulations, and to apply the scope of practice set out by the Nebraska legislature and not expand it one iota.
So is it your position that the scope of chiropractic under our existing statute, under 38-805, is broad enough to permit licensed chiropractors to diagnose and treat brain injuries?
Well, to diagnose and treat neurological systems, of course, because that's what the statute provides expressly. It says they can treat the entire human body without limitation, and they are required to be taught and have continuing credentials in neurology and neurological diagnosis and treatment. And, you know, just imagine the spinal cord is contained in the cervical spine and lumbar spine, and they are clearly treating the nervous system when they treat the neck. And to ignore that, ignore the fact that there's neurology involved in treating the spinal cord, the spinal nerve roots, the neck, would just be chaotic on our entire healthcare system. There's not a medical nervous system or a chiropractic nervous system, but only a human nervous system. And that's what the statute and the regulations expressly allow chiropractors to do. The fact that Dr. McLaren has excelled and has gone on to get additional accreditation is just a matter that may lend to his credibility. But the legislature has clearly given the scope of practice, and they can treat these underlying human conditions within their scope of practice, which excludes surgery and drugs. But what it doesn't exclude are devices. Devices and tools used in chiropractic are numerous. And this one particular tool, there's two of them here, the saccadometer and the Cleveland Clinic CX3 testing, are both widely and clearly recognized by the entire medical community, the chiropractic community, and the neuroscientist community. And what's important here is every single one of the textbooks and the articles and the medical literature submitted both by doctors and by neuroscientists and by chiropractors, which the court completely ignored. Every one of them, if you look in the bibliography, cite and talk about neuroscientists. There's a broad spectrum of people involved in caring for and treating and diagnosing neurological systems, and especially traumatic brain injury, that has exploded in the last 10 years, as pointed out and discussed in Dr. McLaren's affidavits and his deposition. So I just can't imagine what reading out the words neurology and neurological from the statute and the regulations, which is saying that he's not a physician.
Mr. Harris, what specific statutory provision are you referring to?
I'm referring to the statutes which the court took judicial notice of, and they're cited in our brief.
Mr. Harris, is there any type of physical health diagnosis that you would concede is outside the scope of a licensed chiropractor to offer?
I think they can diagnose the human condition and make appropriate referrals after they diagnose it. You know, chiropractors are oftentimes the first responders.
So I want to be sure I understand your position. Is it correct that it is your position that there is no limit to the diagnostic authority or qualification of a chiropractor? They can diagnose any human ailment.
Well, the statute, I just follow the words of the statute because I don't pretend to go beyond that language. I mean, the language says human body, but when it's beyond their treatment protocol, they make a referral. You know, the best analogy I can give you is the defense cited an outside foreign work comp court case. In Nebraska, Rule 49 defines physicians to mean and include not just medicine and surgery, but also chiropractors. And the primary treating physician can be a chiropractor, and he can maintain the continuity of care and initiate referrals to other health care providers when necessary, to surgeons, to neurologists, to urologists, to whatever type of disease they walks into their office. They have to be competent to evaluate the entire human body and make appropriate referrals where necessary. But here, the question is, you know, whether he can do what the statutes and regulations allow him to do clearly.
Where, counsel, in the statutes or regulations, is a licensed, credentialed chiropractor qualified to diagnose and treat a traumatic brain injury?
Well, they're not qualified, and to, there's no specific. It says the human body. It doesn't say the spinal cord. It doesn't say the lumbar spine. It doesn't say the cervical spine. It just says the diagnosis and analysis of the living human body for the purpose of detecting ailments, disorders, and disease. I mean, we can't expand beyond that.
That's the use of, does it,
805.
So the statutory language pertaining to diagnosis in 38-805 sub 1 sub A focuses not just on the kinds of ailments, disorders, and disease, but also the way to diagnose that, correct? What are the limitations, the statutory limitations on the diagnostic tools of a chiropractor?
I don't know if there may have been some limitations before 2000. They couldn't take x-rays of the skull, and that was removed from the language. The language chiropractic physician was added after that as well. They can do physical and clinical examinations, which is what Dr. McLaren described what he did. He's treating human ailments, including nerve energy in the human body. So there aren't any limitations, but I think a chiropractor, can clearly go beyond the scope of his practice if he engages in drugs or surgery or something he's not competent to treat, but he needs to be able to diagnose it and make an appropriate referral.
I do have a question, and I'm trying to clarify your argument, please. Are you relying on the statutory language to establish the expertise or the testimony of McLaren or others to establish the expertise? How is the court informed of making that decision?
Okay. The statute, the regulations, which are to be accorded their plain and ordinary meaning and common sense, is what the court refused to do. And then in addition, we introduced expert affidavits from a neurologist who's also the head of the credentialing board, which is the same board that certifies neurologists and orthopedists and every other type of doctor, same qualifications. And we also introduced articles from Dr. Carrick, who's a leading authority, and the court completely ignored his articles. The court says Dr. McLaren can rely upon chiropractic articles, yet there's two extensive articles relevant and exactly on point to the care and treatment and diagnosis of Dr. McLaren, and the court just refused and turned a blind eye towards all of that evidence. He turned a blind eye to the evidence of Dr. Cotton, who recognized that the literature that Dr. McLaren and Dr. Carrick and every other person referred to in the literature was the Bible and was relied upon by not just neurologists, but neuroscientists. And all that came from Dr. Cotton, who was the only one that is not qualified at all. He has no knowledge whatsoever in the use of these federally approved devices, which are used to diagnose and treat traumatic brain injury. There are recent advances that Dr. McLaren clearly established his knowledge of, and any gap in his testimony or qualifications goes to the weight of his testimony, not its admissibility. Cases are legion in both the Eighth Circuit in Nebraska, and that the liberal admission of expert testimony is what the Daubert Schaeferman framework is intended to do, and district courts are admonished not to weigh or assess the correctness of the competing expert opinions. But what this court did,
time
that I
time is up.
one thing I really want to point out here is when this court told this judge to analyze the methodology and the reliability of the underlying science, he just says, well, not going to do that. Dr. McLaren's not entitled to do that. He needed to look at all the underlying science and the methodology that was clearly established, overwhelmingly established, before he goes to see whether Dr. McLaren applied it. So what he did is he,
Mr. Harris, thank you. Your time is up, I'm afraid.
I'm afraid so too. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sutton, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honor. I think it's important to remember that this case is not, as Justice Stacey alluded to, really a referendum on the status of chiropractic practice in the state of Nebraska. The question is really whether or not the trial court abused its discretion when it excluded Dr. McLaren's testimony on the narrow subject of closed head injuries. And as this court is aware, demonstrating an abuse of discretion is a difficult task. It's something like climbing Mount Everest without supplemental oxygen. Many people attempt it, but very few succeed. Here, because the trial court applied the correct legal standards in conformity with this court's previous opinion, explained its reasoning in a manner that would allow this court to track the legal authorities relied upon and the facts relied upon, there simply is no path to the summit and no way for the appellant to demonstrate an abuse of discretion. And for that reason, the opinion of the trial court excluding Dr. McLaren's testimony should be affirmed. And regarding the legal standards,
I beg your pardon. Apropos your comment, which is somewhat consistent with my question to opposing counsel, what did the judge have in front of him by which to make the assessment of expertise? And isn't that the measure of our appellate review?
Well, Your Honor, as is evident from the trial court's opinion, it reviewed evidence offered at the hearing, including an affidavit by Dr. McLaren, the scope of chiropractic practice statutes, which opposing counsel mentioned, 38805, and the relevant regulations in the Nebraska Administrative Code. I believe that was Title 172, Chapter 29. And in evaluating all these sources, determined that the expertise that Dr. McLaren has did not allow him to testify on the subject of closed head injuries. Regarding the legal standards, on page 18 of this court's previous opinion, it provided specific direction to the trial court. And I would just like to note that on remand, this court directed the trial court to determine whether or not Dr. McLaren was an expert, and if so, whether the offered opinions were within the scope of that expertise, and if so, to conduct additional analysis, meaning the trial court was not required to conduct an entire lengthy Daubert analysis if the trial court, as it did here, determined that the expert in question was not qualified on the subject matter. But the trial court, even though it determined that Dr. McLaren was not qualified to issue an opinion on the subject of closed head injuries, did provide this additional analysis, including the discussion of the devices relied upon by Dr. McLaren, and a brief discussion of why the methods used by Dr. McLaren were not scientifically valid or reliable. So I think it's fair to say that the trial court followed the instructions provided by this court to the letter in issuing its new opinion. And second, the trial court appropriately applied these legal standards in a manner consistent with its discretionary function regarding testimony.
What's the significance of the passage of time between the injury and the diagnosis and the notion that Dr. McLaren didn't rule out the possibility that these injuries came from what I take was extended kickboxing?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's significant that as the trial court noted, that Dr. McLaren failed to explain his reasoning, failed to adequately address why no medical provider diagnosed the plaintiff with a closed head injury immediately after the accident and essentially did not perform a differential diagnosis of sufficient breadth or detail to convince the trial court that the underlying methodology he was using were scientifically valid or reliable. But again, this was
would that delay in diagnosis and the failure to rule out an alternative cause, would those facts alone give the leave it within the district court's discretion to rule out this testimony?
That's a difficult question, Your Honor, but based on what the trial court did in this case, I think that's within the trial court's discretion, as long as it did here, it explains that time lapse is the primary reason for its decision making, because that would provide reviewing courts like this one with the necessary basis to evaluate that decision and rule upon it.
Counsel, I understood Mr. Harris to argue that under 38-805 sub 1 sub A, there is no limit to a licensed chiropractor's qualifications to diagnose, that it's simply unlimited. Do you agree or disagree with that as a textual matter?
I disagree with that, Your Honor, as a textual matter. I read the statute to provide an exclusive list. Subsection 1A does not provide that this diagnosis includes but is not limited to the following factors. I think the fact that the statute mentions diagnostic x-rays, physical and clinical examinations, and routine procedures, including urinalysis, that in combination with the list of routine procedures referenced in the Nebraska Administrative Code serves to limit the scope of practice of chiropractors. And from a more general perspective, as you indicated earlier, Justice Stacey, there are two separate licenses within the state of Nebraska. There is one for a chiropractor and one for a medical doctor. And those two licenses should exist for a reason. They should not overlap to such an extent that both of them become meaningless and the statutes differentiating them also become essentially meaningless.
Has the legislature authorized licensed chiropractors to diagnose more than they are licensed to treat under the existing statutory language?
No, I think that would be a little inconsistent, Your Honor, at least from my reading of the statute and my interpretation of it. I think it makes more sense that a chiropractor, the expertise provided to a chiropractor must be limited to what they can diagnose and treat. I'm sure if they saw something that concerned them that required additional medical expertise, they could certainly refer a patient to a medical doctor, but that referral in and of itself does not require, at least to my knowledge, a specific diagnosis. and just to briefly return to the application of these standards, Your Honor, the previous opinion issued by the trial court was rather short, which is why this court remanded this case for additional proceedings. And the trial court's new opinion follows in detail what this court required of it. It explains its reasoning. It allows this court to understand the trial judge's thinking, where it's coming from, and the authorities relied upon. And under this very deferential standard of review that applies here, I simply don't think it's fair to categorize the trial court's opinion as an abuse of discretion. And I think while appellant makes a variety of arguments, they again sort of skirt around the central point of the case, which is, again, that limited exclusion of expert testimony only on the subject of closed head injuries. And given the reasoning provided by the trial court, I simply don't think that this was an abuse of discretion, and the trial court's decision on this matter should be affirmed. And, Your Honors, unless there are any additional questions, I'm happy to end my argument there.
Mr. Sutton, when I was a trial judge, I think I would have appreciated your analogy to Mount Everest and abuse of discretion, but you would concede, would you not, that we've never used that analogy or that language in any of our opinions?
I would concede that, Your Honor. I haven't read them all, but as far as I know, that's
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sutton. We have no time for rebuttal. So that then will take us to the next case of the day, which is, in fact, Mallendorf versus Mallendorf. Counsel, thank you very much.